Chapter 3. Woebegone. Plagueis' instincts about Baldemnik were correct. The planet's rugged beauty was of a sort that appealed to the hedonistic side of human nature, and would one day draw the wealthiest of that species to bask in the warm light of its primary, tow its pristine sands, swim in its animated waters, and dine on the toothsome fish that filled its vast oceans. But in those days, humans were still relatively scarce in that part of the Outer Rim, and most visitors to Baldemnik hailed from Hutspace or the far reaches of the Perlemian trade route. And so Captain Elan La was Togruta, and her first mate, a Zabrak named Makap. The Woebegone's pilot was a Balasar, her navigator, a Dresselian, and her three crew members, Clatuinian, Kalish, and an Aqualish of the Quara race. Near humans all, to use the term favored at that time in the Corps, where chauvinism had been raised to an art form. The only non-sentient was a bipedal multi-appendaged droid called 114D, after its model number. Baldemnik was but one of their planetary haunts. As often as not, they could be spotted on Vestral, Sikkim 4, or Carlix's Folly. But all were similar, in that Captain Law and her shipmates rarely saw anything more of the planets than what lay within a radius of 5 kilometers from the principal spaceports. And their contact with Indigenes was limited to spaceport functionaries, merchants, information brokers, and those in the pleasure professions. Theirs was a precarious business, at a time when pirates plied the intersystem trade routes, hyperspace beacons were few and far between, and a lapse in judgment could result in disaster. The cost of fuel was exorbitant. Corrupt customs officials had to be bribed, and import-export taxes were subject to change without notice. Delays meant that cargoes of foodstuffs could lose the freshness that made them desirable, or worse yet, spoil altogether. Dangers were manifold, and the earnings were meager. You had to love the work, or perhaps be on the run, from the law, yourself, or whoever else. As a consequence of having imbibed too much local grog and gambled away too many hard-earned credits, and perhaps as atonement for so much carousing, concerns about the coming trip had bobbed to the surface of Captain La's mind like an inflated balloon held underwater, then released. "No oversights this run," she was warning the crew in a gentle way, as they made their way across the landing zone to their waiting ship. The fact that she had used the same euphemism Bleer had to minimize the impact of the near catastrophe he had caused made all of them laugh, except the Balasar, who lowered his head in mock shame, his twin antenna palps deepening in color.
"We take your meaning, Captain," Makap said. "No inopportune omissions." "Ineradicable errors," the Kalish Pepe Roche interjected.
"Dumbass mistakes,"
Duzuto completed, his close-set inward-curving tusks in need of a thorough scaling. The captain allowed them a moment of merriment.
"I'm serious," she said as they approached the Woebegone's lowered boarding ramp. "I'll say it again. This ship operates as a democracy. I'm your captain because knowing who's good at what is just something I have a talent for."
She looked at Bleer.
"Do I ever tell you how to pilot?"
Then at Simisali.
"Do I ever question your decision about jump points?"
"No, Captain," the two said, as if by rote.
"So I'm simply speaking as a member of what should be a competent team and not as a commander."
She blew out her breath in a way that shook her trio of striped headtails.
"Either we turn a profit on this run, or we think about going to the huts for another loan."
Even Wandao, who had more dealings with various huts than anyone else, bemoaned the mere prospect.
"That's right," La told the tall Clatuinian. "And don't any of you fool yourself into thinking that we can float an honest loan, because no bank worth its assets is going to accept the Woebegone as collateral."
Makap and Bleer traded quick glances before the Zabrak said,
"Excuse me for saying so, Captain, but you didn't seem particularly concerned about credits last night."
"Watch what you say,"
La told her first mate, barely restraining a smile.
"I thought you were ready to give that young thing the ship,"
Pepe said, joining the tease.
La waved a hand in dismissal. I was just toying with him.
Toy being the operative word,
Ma Kap said,
since he was young enough to still play with them.
The captain planted her hands on her hips. I can be convincing when I want to be.
Oh, that you were, Zuto said,
reigniting a chorus of laughter that accompanied them into the Wobegon's main cabin space, where 114D was waiting.
Everything in order?
La asked the droid. The droid raised three of its appendages in an approximation of a salute.
Shipshape, Captain.
All the cargo is aboard and accounted for?
Aboard and accounted for, Captain.
You check the thermal readouts?
In each bay, Captain.
She returned a satisfied nod. Well, all right then. The shipmates split up, each with duties to perform. Bleer and Simasali to the cockpit, Zuto, Wandao, and Pepe to check that the cargo had been properly stowed, Ma Kap and 114D to seal the ship, and Captain La to get clearance from Baldemnik spaceport control. Without fanfare, the ship left the warm world behind and jumped from cold ether into the netherworld of hyperspace. La was still seated at the communications console when Bleer radioed her from the cockpit.
We need your input on something.
Since when, she said.
Seriously.
She headed forward and had no sooner ducked into the cockpit than Simasali indicated a flashing telltale on the ship's status display suite. A small metal plate below the telltale read, Cargo Bay 4 Ambient.
Too hot or too cold?
La asked the Dresselian.
Too cold.
La flicked her forefinger against the telltale, but it continued to flash.
Funny, that usually works.
She studied Simasali's frown.
What do you think?
He sniffed and ran a hand over a hairless, deeply fissured head that mirrored the appearance of the convoluted brain it contained.
Well, it could be the bay thermostat.
Or?
Or one of the shipping containers could have opened.
By itself?
Maybe during the jump,
Bleer said from the pilot's chair.
Okay, so we go check it out.
She glanced from Bleer to Simasali and shook her head in ignorance.
What aren't you telling me?
Bleer answered for the two of them.
Remember the Zabrak that Ma was talking to in the cantina?
Which cantina?
La said, then added, No, I remember him. He was looking for a lift. Simasali nodded.
He had been booted from his last freighter. He didn't say why. But Ma thought he smelled trouble and said we couldn't take him aboard.
La followed the clues they were giving her and nodded.
You're thinking we have a stowaway. Just a thought,
the Dresselian said.
Which is why you wanted to check with me before going aft.
Exactly.
La's face grew almost as wrinkled as Simasali's. The ship would have told us if anyone had tampered with the anti-intrusion, sis.
Unless he came in with a cargo,
Bleer said.
You mean inside one of the containers?
Bleer nodded.
But then he'd be stiff as an icicle by now.
La turned to Simasali.
Does Bay 4 have a vid feed?
On screen,
Simasali said, swiveling his chair to face the status displays. La put her palms flat on the console and leaned toward the screen while the Dresselian brought up grainy views of the cargo bay. Finally, the remote cam found what they were looking for, an opened shipping container wreathed by clouds of coolant with its cargo of costly meat fins already defrosting.
Spawn of a...
La started when the next view of the cargo bay stunned her into slack-jawed silence. Bleer blinked repeatedly before asking,
Is that what I think it is?
La swallowed hard and found her voice.
Well, it sure isn't the Zabrak.
Plagueis was seated atop one of the smaller shipping containers when the hatch began to cycle. Fully awake since the Wobegon's jump to hyperspace, he had set still for the various scans the crew had run, and now lowered the hood of the lightweight and bloodied robe. When the hatch slid to, he found himself confronted by the ship's Togruta female captain, along with a muscular male Zabrak, a mottled Klaatuinian, as tall as a normal mune, an Aqualish of the two-eyed variety, and a scarlet-hued, scaly-skinned Kalish, whose face resembled those of the bats Plagueis had consumed on Baldemnik, and who was emitting an oleo of potent pheromones. All five carried blasters, but only the Klaatuinian's was primed for fire and leveled at Plagueis.
You're not listed on the shipping manifest, stranger.
Captain La said as she stepped into the bay, breath clouds emerging with the words. Plagueis spread his hands in an innocent gesture.
I confess to being a stowaway, Captain.
La approached guardedly, motioning to the open container a few meters away.
How did you survive in there?
Plagueis mimicked the wave of her hand.
Those sea creatures make a comfortable bed.
The Zabrak surged forward, his stippled cranium furrowed in anger.
Those creatures are how we make our living, Mjorn. And right now they're not worth a carking credit.
Plagueis locked eyes with him.
I apologize for spoiling some of your cargo.
The coolant, La said more harshly. How did you survive that?
We Mjorns have three hearts, Plagueis said, crossing one leg over the other. Two of them are under voluntary control, so I was able to keep my blood circulating and my body temperature close to normal.
Standing by the open container, the Quara said,
Speaking of blood, you're leaking some.
Plagueis saw that some of the sea creatures were coated with congealed blood.
The result of an unfortunate accident, but thank you for noticing.
La shifted her gaze from the container to Plagueis.
We have a medical droid. I'll have it take a look at your injury.
That's very kind of you, Captain.
You're a long way from the Braxent Run, the Kalish said. And probably the last species we'd expect to find stowing away in a cargo container.
Plagueis nodded in agreement.
I can well imagine.
Garnier's spaceport has passenger flights to Bemisari,
the Zabrak added.
You couldn't wait, or you're out of credits.
To be honest, I wish to avoid the common spaceways.
La and the Zabrak traded dubious looks.
Are you a fugitive? She asked. Wanted?
Plagueis shook his head.
I do, however, value my privacy.
Well, you might,
the Quara said.
But you have to admit.
He motioned to the bloody sea creatures.
This undermines your credibility, Sam. What brought you to Baldemic, Mjorn?
The Klaatuwinian asked before Plagueis could speak.
I'm not at liberty to divulge the nature of my activities.
Banking clan investments,
the Klaatuwinian said with a sneer.
Or lawyering? That's all the Mjorns do, Captain.
La appraised Plagueis.
Is he right?
Plagueis shrugged.
Not all of us are bankers or lawyers. No more than all Togrutas are pacifists.
Be better for you if you were a financial wizard,
the Zabrak said,
to avoid being jettisoned from our ship.
Plagueis kept his eyes on La.
Captain, I appreciate that you and your crew have many questions about me. But perhaps for the sake of simplicity, the two of us could speak privately for a moment?
When she hesitated, he added,
Strictly in the interest of facilitating an agreement.
La glanced at everyone, then set her jaw and nodded.
I won't be long,
she told the Zabrak as he was exiting the bay.
But keep us on vid anyway.
The Zabrak shot Plagueis a gimlet stare as he spoke.
If you are long, we'll be returning soon enough.
Plagueis waited until he and La were alone.
Thank you, Captain.
She scowled.
Enough of the polite jabber. Who are you? And why didn't you leave Baldemnik aboard whatever craft brought you there?
Plagueis loosed an elaborate sigh.
Before we go into any of that, suppose we assess the present situation squarely. I've stowed away aboard your vessel in the hope of arranging quick passage to Munalist.
Speaking in basic, Plagueis pronounced the word with a second N, silent.
Fortunately for both of us, I'm in a position to reward you handsomely for transport. And of course, I'll cover the cost of whatever precious cargo I've ruined. You need only quote a reasonable price and the deal can be concluded. I assure you, Captain, that I am immune of my word.
Her eyes narrowed in misgiving.
Leaving aside your identity for the moment, you know the important things. Your onward passage is a matter I'll have to take up with the crew.
Plagueis blinked in genuine confusion.
I'm not sure I understand. You are the Wobegon's captain, are you not?
We're equals aboard this ship, La said. I don't make any major decisions without at least hearing everyone out. Whether those decisions involve the cargo we transport or where we deliver it. And while you're trying to make up your mind whether I'm noble or simply foolish, Let me add that I don't care what you think of the arrangement. As you said, it's the situation.
Plagueis smiled without showing his teeth.
In that case, Captain, I await the results of the summit.
La relaxed somewhat.
You're going to have to sit tight in the meantime.
Plagueis took the conditions in stride.
Take as much time as needed. The closer we get to Ithor, the closer I am to home.
The words stopped her cold.
How do you know we're bound for Ithor?
The same way I know that your name is Elin La.
Delighting in her confusion, Plagueis said,
I'm not a telepath, Captain La. After I selected your ship from among those on the field, I sliced into Baldemnik's spaceport network.
She tilted her head in a mix of interest and unease.
Why the Wobegon, then?
Plagueis sniffed. I don't gamble, Captain, unless I know that the odds of winning are on my side.
She snorted. That's not gambling.
In the main cabin space, 114D had been monitoring the conversation of the crew members since their return from Cargo Bay 4. The closest thing the Wobegon had to an actual medical specialist, the droid was responsible for the care and health of the crew, and so it had grown accustomed to eavesdropping on conversations whenever and wherever possible. Having created individual profiles based on heartbeat and breathing rates, body temperature and language, facial expression and vocalization, the droid understood that the discovery of a Mune intruder aboard the ship had significantly elevated Ma Kop's stress level.
When have you ever known a Mune to do that?
The Zebrok was saying.
When have you ever known a Mune, period?
Wandao asked in kind.
All right, then. When have you ever heard about a Mune doing that?
Before Ma Kop or anyone else could respond, the captain entered the cabin space, clearly confounded, though doing her best to disguise it. 114D noted increased blood flow in her headtails, which were themselves sensory organs, and a change in her pigmentation. A Togruta response to nervous tension that sometimes prompted involuntary mimetic camouflage.
So?
Ma Kop said, coming to his feet.
The crew members listened intently as Captain La summarized the short exchange she'd had with the Mune stowaway, who had refused to provide any personal details, not even his name. Nor had he offered explanation for his presence on Baldemnik, or divulged the reason behind his wanting to depart in haste. Most important, he had revealed nothing about the cause or nature of his injury. Instead, he had fixed on arranging a deal for passage to Munalinst, a world on the distant Braxton Run and corporate headquarters of the Intergalactic Banking Clan.
What's your gut telling you about him, Captain?
Pepe asked, his pointed ears twitching in curiosity.
Captain La glanced back at the corridor that led to Cargo Bay 4.
He's as slick as they come, and used to getting his way. But either we take him back to Baldemnik and put our cargo at risk, or we drop him at our first stop and make him someone else's problem.
Or we just jettison him now,
Wendao said.
La shook her head.
We don't know he didn't tell someone on Baldemnik that he was stowing away. And if he did, his disappearance could put us in serious muck.
What's it going to be, then?
Ma Kop pressed.
La made her lips a thin line.
I think we should get him off our hands as soon as possible.
Wandao and Zuto exchanged glances.
You don't want to even discuss coming up with a price for passage?
I've never been on the Braxton Run, La said. Have any of you?
Head shook.
Is he willing to cover the cost of the spoiled cargo?
Pepe asked.
He said he would.
Then maybe we take him to Ithor,
the Kalish went on.
If he proves to be a cooperative passenger, we could consider taking him all the way to Munalist. Certainly wouldn't hurt to get familiar with that corner of space.
I don't know.
La took her lower lip between her teeth.
I'll go one step further, Zuto said, leading with his whiskered snout. I mean, this Mune could be a jackpot that's fallen right into our laps. Weren't you just saying that no bank would ever grant us a loan against the Wobegon? Well, Munalist is the bank, and this Mune can provide all the collateral we'll ever need.
A reward for years of leading clean lives,
Pepe added.
La regarded the two of them.
Meaning what? We hold him for ransom?
Zuto drew in his tusks and shrugged.
We don't have to call it that.
Forget it,
La said.
We've never done that. Well, once maybe, but we're not about to do it again.
I agree,
Ma Kop said. Wanda's head bobbed.
Same.
Pepe withdrew somewhat.
Okay, so I was just thinking out loud.
There's something else,
Ma Kop said. Raising his big hand, he beckoned to 114D.
Tell the captain what you were telling us.
The droid moved to where the crew members were gathered and swiveled its round head toward La.
Captain, I merely pointed out that Mewns are not known to travel unaccompanied without ample reasons for doing so. In fact, most Mewns are reluctant to leave Munalist for any purpose other than to transact business negotiations.
That's exactly what I was saying about collateral,
Pepe interrupted.
There has to be some financial reason for his being on Baldemnik. Some major deal in the works we might be able to get in on. A construction project, maybe.
Let 4D finish,
Ma Kop said. La looked at the droid.
Go ahead.
It has yet to be determined just what the Mune was involved in. Suppose, however, that the nature of his business is going to impact Baldemnik in a negative way. Should word spread that the crew of the Wobegon lent their support to the Mune's illegal departure, then what might become of the ship's reputation in the Aureal sector? You may wish to include the worth of that in your calculations regarding an arrangement for onward passage.
Markop folded his arms across his barrel chest.
Is our stowaway going to offer to set each of us up for life in case our services are no longer wanted in this sector?
What about what the Mewns can do to us if we don't take him?
Zuto said.
They've got a reach as long as a galactic arm.
Mandal laughed without mirth.
What are they going to do? Downgrade our portfolios? Freeze our assets? Ruin our credit rating? Our only assets are this ship, and our reputation for doing what we say we're going to do.
Mostly,
Markop said quietly. Pepe slapped his hands on his thighs.
Goes back to what I said about asking for a lot more than what he might see as a fair price. These banking clan types hold on to every credit. But we've got ourselves a live Mune. And no matter who he is or what he's pretending to be, I guarantee you he's worth more than 10 years of dealing in meat tails and octopods.
Markop broke the short silence.
Captain,
I'm not swayed by any of this, she said after a moment. I want him off our hands.
A look of puzzlement tugged at Zuto's features. You think he's dangerous?
Pepe ridiculed the idea.
Mewns are cowards, the lot of them. They use credits as weapons.
La took a long breath.
You asked for my gut reaction. That's what I'm giving you.
I've an idea,
Markop said.
A kind of compromise. We drop out of hyperspace and calm the authorities on Baldemnik. If this Mune's wanted for whatever reason, we return him, cargo or no. If not, we decide on a figure for taking him to Ithor and no farther.
He looked at La.
Are you willing to take that deal to him, Captain?
La responded as if her words had just caught up with her thoughts.
All right. That sounds reasonable.
But she remained seated.
Do you, want backup?
Wendao asked after another long moment had passed.
No, no, she said, finally getting to her feet. I'm the captain.
114D could almost hear her remind herself. Focusing its photoreceptors, it observed her right hand move discreetly to the blaster holstered on her hip, and with a flick of her thumb, she primed the weapon for fire.
We're going to have to keep you on ice for a bit longer,
La said when she entered the cargo bay. Plagueis hadn't moved from the container that served as his seat, but his robe was parted and his hands rested on the tops of his knees.
Does that mean you failed to reach a consensus?
I wouldn't go that far, La said. We've decided we need to know who you are before we agree to provide you with passage. And since you seem reluctant to tell us, we're going to check with Baldemnik.
Plagueis made his eyes dull with disappointment.
Captain, I've told you all you really need to know.
The Wobegon lurched slightly.
We're dropping out of hyperspace, La said. In his mind, Plagueis heard Darth Tenebris say,
To we who dwell in the Force, normal life is little more than pretense. Our only actions of significance are those we undertake in service to the dark side.
I can't permit this, Captain, he told her. Her expression hardened.
I'm afraid you'll have to.
He had been aware from the start of the conversation that her blaster was primed, and now her hand reached for it. Sharp canines glinted in her slightly open mouth. Had he truly believed that a deal could be arranged with the Wobegon's hot-tempered and immature crew members? Their fates had been sealed from the instant Plagueis had glimpsed the ship on the landing field. The possibility of reaching any other conclusion was fictional. From that first moment, all of them had been locked into an inevitable series of events. The Force had brought them together, into conflict. Even La must have sensed as much. Plagueis said, Don't, Captain. But by then, the warning was nothing more than words.